Hi, I'm your host, Dr. Caroline Leaf, and welcome to my podcast, Cleaning Up the Mental Mess. We have been told that hitting the snooze button is a bad habit, but is it? Is it true that this creates a lazy start to the day and fragmented sleep patterns? Well, new research is challenging this notion, and I'm really pleased because I really battle to just jump out of bed alert in the morning. Today, I dive into how pressing the snooze button can actually help improve cognition, and I also give you my foolproof morning neurocycle to activate the resilience you need for the day. So let's dive in. But just a quick note before we begin. If you are hearing this, you are currently not on my neurocycle app and will only be hearing the first half of this conversation. In order to hear the full episode ad-free, you'll need to subscribe to the neurocycle app where you can listen to the full episode in the NeuroLife section and so many other episodes. And don't forget, you can watch ad-free on the neurocycle app. Let's dive in. Welcome to another NeuroLive. And tonight I'm going to talk about something that's actually quite fun. And it's something that I saw in the news recently. And I want to start giving you more sciencey stuff that is to help you understand sort of the latest research that will help you with your mental health. And this one is really close to my heart because it's pressing that snooze button and getting that extra 20 or 30 minutes of sleep in the morning when, you know, the alarm goes off. And I don't know if you do this or if you battle to wake up in the morning. Well, I tell you, I battle to wake up in the morning. So when I read this article, I was particularly interested in this, and it's just some great information and it's new information and it contradicts the current thinking that people have around pressing the snooze button. So generally it's been explained as being a bad habit. So what a snoozer is someone who sets the alarm, and as the alarm goes off, you press snooze and go back to sleep. And then 10 minutes later or 5 minutes later, the alarm goes on, you press snooze again. And then this repeats maybe every 10 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes, 3 to 4 times, and maybe longer. But generally it's around about 20 to 30 minutes that people give themselves to wake up. And it's been seen as a bad habit, but is it really? Some research coming out recently, and quite a lot of research that is actually coming out, and more is indicated. So this research is saying, hey, we need more research on this because there's something in this. And it actually shows that snoozing is not bad for you, that it's actually quite good for you. And I was very pleased about this because if you're a late night owl like I am, even though I used to really stay up late, sometimes between 12 and 3 and do a lot of my work there. And I've changed my sleep cycle slightly, but I still go to sleep, you know, between sort of like 9:30 is the earliest, but normally it's between 11 and 12, which means that to wake up at 6:30 or whatever in the morning, 7:30 in the morning, I can't just wake up and jump out of bed and be all alert and all awake and whatever and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed or whatever, as they say. But my husband can. I mean, my husband, he will in bed 9:30, like he puts his head on the pillow and he's gone. And he wakes up in the morning. The minute he wakes up, he's out of bed, fresh, alert. And I'm still lying there and 3 cups of coffee later and, you know, trying to wake up and sort of dozy and playing with my dogs and reading a few things and eventually kind of falling out of bed. And there is a reality to this. There are different types of circadian rhythms, and there's different types of rhythms that we have. And you get your late night owls and you get your morning larks. And my husband happens to be a morning lark and I'm a late night owl. And also the younger you are, the more of a late night owl you are. And as you get older, that can shift, but it's still quite unique. So it's not every single person shifts, but in general, the younger you are, the more you stay, your body just wants to stay up later. So you want to sleep longer in the morning. So this trying to wake up in the morning thing is called sleep inertia. I like to call it rather sleep wake inertia, because as you're waking up in the morning, everything changes. So as your mind is waking up your brain and your body, so as your non-conscious mind is waking up your brain and your body, that's when chemicals that were flowing in your brain in one direction shift direction. And there's a lot of electromagnetic changes that are happening. And that's not just in your brain, because remember, your mind is in your brain and your body. There's also a lot of things happening in your heart and in your immune system, and things are all changing and waking up. And that For some people that happens really fast, like my husband. For some people it happens really slow, like me. And the younger you are, as your body's growing and changing and you're getting into that rhythm, whichever one you're going to end up being, generally because of the fact that your brain and body and are growing and your mind, brain, body network is stabilizing, it takes slightly longer in the morning to wake up. So when you wake up in the morning, your cortisol levels are higher to start waking you up, getting you more focused. And for the older you are, the more cortisol, the earlier the cortisol kind of wakes up and increases. And the younger you are, the longer it takes. So just as a side note, if children going to school really early, like it's 7 in the morning and starting school really early, 7:30 or 7:45, which is quite common, the cortisol isn't totally fully flowing, and that affects all the other biochemistry. And so focus, highest level of cognitive focus is not going to happen for young people. And I'm talking about your primary school, middle school, high school. It's not going to happen until closer to 8:30, 9 o'clock. So that's to bear that in mind. If you are a teacher or a parent and your child seems to be very dozy, or your kids in class seem to be very dozy early in the morning, you know, this is one of the reasons why. But coming back to the snooze button and how this can help us, as I said, it's been seen as a bad habit, but actually the new research is showing that it actually really can help with this waking up thing. This sleep to wake change that is happening inside of your brain can take up to 20 to 30 minutes for this adjustment to happen. And so therefore the snooze button actually helps with this adjustment. And if you've got this adjustment period of 20 to 30 minutes, you can actually have what they're finding is improved cognitive function, improved just alertness, improved mood, all kinds of things. And obviously there's more research being done, and these researchers do recommend more research being done. So I've got a couple of notes here. So if I look to the side, I don't want to miss out anything. So basically, firstly, you get something called a chronic snoozer. What is a chronic snoozer? Chronic snoozer is someone who, chronic means long-term. It means that you're doing it on a regular basis. Like taking chronic medication, which means you're taking it on a regular basis. In terms of a chronic snoozer, it's someone who does it at least 2 to 3 times a week. So if you are doing this, you know, press your alarm, go back to sleep thing 2 to 3 times a week, you essentially could be a chronic snoozer. If you have a young child or a child that's still, a child still going to school, so, you know, from about middle school to high school, then you may want, and they battle to wake up in the morning, you may want to actually introduce snoozing into their cycle, so that basically you put the alarm on and, you know, let them press it off. And like, in other words, set it for 30 minutes before they need to get up, to give themselves that 30 minutes to wake and press off the snooze button, wake up, press off the snooze button, and then, you know, give them that 30 minutes to adjust. So to build that into their routine. I have been doing a lot of spring cleaning around the house lately, and I'm sure many of you have been doing the same. You may also be thinking about how to get rid of any unnecessary toxins or allergens, so this is a great time to take a look at upgrading your bed. Birch mattresses are GOTS and Green Guard Gold certified, meaning they are free of any polyurethane-based foams and harsh unnecessary chemicals and pollutants. The wool in Birch mattresses also makes hypoallergenic and mildew resistant. And unlike other brands, Birch mattresses do not contain fiberglass, which can be harmful to your health. Other mattress companies use fiberglass as a flame retardant in their products, but Birch mattresses are free from harmful fiberglass materials. In fact, Birch has its own manufacturing facility, which is entirely free from products containing fiberglass. I love knowing that the mattress I'm sleeping on is made with natural and organic materials sourced straight from nature without harm coming to the environment or workers. I also love how comfortable and durable the mattress is without any harmful side effects on my health. My husband, who's a pretty warm sleeper, is equally happy with our Birch mattress, which keeps him cool at night in a natural way. Plus, with your Birch mattress, you get a 100-night sleep trial along with a 25-year warranty. The best part about all of this is that Birch delivers your mattress right to your door for free within the US. They also offer in-home setup and removal to make your buying experience as convenient as possible. It comes rolled up in a box and is super easy to set up. Thank you, Birch Living, for sponsoring this product. If you're looking to upgrade your sleep, it's the perfect time to check out Birch Living. You can get 20% off a Birch mattress plus 2 free Echo Rest pillows by visiting my link, birchliving.com/Dr. Leaf. Just visit birchliving.com/Dr. Leaf and get 20% off your Birch mattress plus 2 free Echo Rest pillows for a limited time. The link and details will be in the show notes. So if you find that for that point for middle school, high school, I would recommend that and this is what the research is saying, to help them. Unless they jump out of bed alert and they're fine and they're okay. But if they're backing a little bit, that is something to bear in mind. And same for you. If you find that, it's hard for you to wake up, and I've had to build that into my life, is I know that I'm going to an extra 30 minutes in the morning. So if I've got to be somewhere, let's say 9 o'clock, and I've got to drive, once you've built in allocated drive time and all that kind of thing, or maybe it's not, you don't have to drive, just say you've got a meeting or something at 9, I will always give myself an hour to get ready and I'll tack on 30 minutes. And that 30 minutes is my wake up time. I personally don't like an alarm. I hate that sound. So I'll have one alarm, my husband's my alarm, it wakes me up, and then I will turn on a light or something like that to start helping me. So you don't necessarily have to use an alarm. You can, or you can adjust, you can do what you want. But the whole point is to give yourself that extra time. And you may have a little bit of a nap, wake up. Now, I will wake up without an alarm in those nap periods, adjusting. I generally only will nap for maybe 5 or 10 minutes. So I found my rhythm. So I don't need an alarm to wake me up. But maybe when you first get into this, or you may always need an alarm. One of my other children, they put that alarm and they need that alarm to go off and to wake them up. And my husband, the rare time that maybe we have to get up at like 3 a.m. to catch a flight or something, and he puts the alarm on. He's not a chronic snoozer. He's a rare snoozer. But then I've noticed that he will snooze and then the alarm goes off a second time and he'll jump up at the second time. So if you are a chronic snoozer, it's not a bad habit. You actually are helping yourself and your cognition and your brain and your mind-brain-body connection to get into that state of alertness. And what I also do is I build in a little time to do a neurocycle. And in that neurocycle, once I've done a little bit of the sleeping and stuff, so about kind of like halfway through or maybe 20 minutes in, as I'm drinking my coffee, now I'm actually sitting up and drinking my coffee, that is when I will do a little mini neurocycle just to check my signals. So what is my emotion? Like maybe I'm feeling a bit, overwhelmed or happy or whatever. I just check my emotion. I check my body, where I feel it in my body. So maybe I'm feeling overwhelmed. Maybe I've noticed my gut's a little bit, there's a little bit of anxiety in my gut. It feels kind of a little churlish or whatever. My behaviors, I seem to not be smiling, perspective. I can see my outlook's a little bit negative, mindset. Or it could be the other way. I wake up very happy, feeling like happy and I'm smiling and my body feels, even though I'm sleepy, it's feeling kind of happy. And my perspective is, oh, today's exciting. And so I always check that, quickly grab a signal check. You can do that with practice. I can do that in honestly about 10 seconds. And then I will quickly reflect, okay, why do I feel like this? Why do I have these signals? Not just the feeling, but all 4 signals. And then I don't normally write at that stage. I'll just visualize, okay, well, maybe this happened when I went to sleep. Did I discuss that? Or there's something coming up today. So just a bit of a reflecting on why that could be like that, and then just visualizing that. So it's just a quick analyze the signals. Why do I think I feel like this? Is it because of sleep last night or something coming up today? Visualize what it was. Quickly get a visual picture. Maybe if it was something that I had discussed just before going to sleep. Maybe just, think back to that and visualize that. And so that I'm aware that's what maybe made me feel like this. Or maybe it was something that's coming up during the day or something like that. So just quickly visualize. So that also been talking 10 seconds at each stage, maybe even less. So I'm 30 seconds in at this point. Then my recheck will be, okay, well, I went to sleep like that. I thought about that. This is how it's resulted in me feeling. I don't want this to carry on during the course of today, because if I get into a slump, it's going to affect the rest of my day. So something like that. Or, oh, wow, this is great that I feel like this. Let me focus on this. Let me grab this. Let me use it to increase my resilience. And then my action while I'm drinking my coffee will be, let's say it's a negative one, my action would be something like, okay, well, this has happened. What am I going to do? I'm going to have to do a full neurocycle while I'm getting ready, just so that I have a plan in place to deal with this issue coming up today. Or if it's a happy one, okay, I'm going to really, while I'm getting ready, because that's when I do my neurocycle, the longer ones, I'm going to really focus before I dive into whatever I'm working on. I'm really going to do a quick neurocycle to make sure that I focus in and spend a bit of time really honing in on this happy stuff. And so I don't, it's just a quick analysis. And that takes me 50 seconds. And then when I'm finally out of bed and I'm getting ready, then, and I'll do my neurocycle wherever I am on a 63-day cycle. Then, but just before I start that, I'll take whatever I ended off with in bed and just do another, just like almost like an orientation neurocycle. So let's say if it's with a negative one, negative mindset, I just, you know, get myself under, get it, think about it again, run through the same things again, just with a bit more depth. Well, my active reach would be something like, okay, I'm about to do my other neurocycle. I don't want this to affect that. I acknowledge that I feel like that, and I acknowledge that that's the plan I've got for today. And as the day rolls out, I'll probably have to add to that. And then I'll move into my other neurocycle. If it's the happy one, I'll quickly do the happy one and make sure I carry that over into the day and into that neurocycle. So that's just, you know, adding on to what you can do with the snooze function, where you having those little naps. It's getting your brain, mind, and body, the network, remember, mind, brain, body, the whole network ready for the day. And so you switch off, have your little naps, go back, wake up, all that kind of thing, but then make sure that you add what I've just explained onto it. Do a little quick 50 second, 10 second. You know, normally it takes me about 50 seconds, between 30 and 60 max. So somewhere in that region, do a quick neurocycle. And then by the time you can then do towards the end of that 20 to 30 minute period. So when you get out of bed, you've done all the neurophysiological adjustments, but then you've also added on this cognitive component and this neurocycle component where you've got your non-conscious and conscious connecting and setting you up for the day. It makes such a difference. You know, that whole thing of getting out of bed on the wrong side. Well, this essentially is a way of countering getting out of bed on the wrong side. Okay, so just a couple of things just to talk a little bit more back about the research. As I said, if I look to the side, I'm just making sure that I get the names of the researchers and so on correctly. By the way, I read this article and it really grabbed my attention, as I mentioned, in Scientific American, and it was by Jocelyn Solis Moreira. Really excellent one. And it was about a month, about 2 months ago. Okay, so it was around about February 24th. So basically, in the Journal of Sleep Research, they show that this was really interesting, that losing only 6 minutes of sleep and didn't affect morning sleepiness or mood, but actually improved cognition. So in that sleep-wake cycle, you can lose up to 6 minutes of your total sleep in doing the snooze thing, but that 6 minutes of sleep didn't actually affect your whole benefit of your entire night of sleep. In fact, it improved your cognition. It actually improved how you functioned during the day. So that snooze thing, that transition that it created, the loss of 6 minutes of sleep was actually not a problem. It was actually it improved how you function. And then some research in 2022 said that chronic snoozers weren't different to non-snoozers, because there was research prior to that and a lot of thinking prior to that, that chronic snoozers would battle more with sleep and battle more during the day than non-snoozers. But what they're saying is that's actually not the difference. And in fact, if the snooze button is what you need, it's not for everyone. Okay. And it may only be on occasion for you. And that's why I've given you sort of a model or an outline of how you can use the snooze button. But if you are a chronic snoozer, you, according to the research, you're no worse off. You're the same as someone who isn't a snoozer. So, and as I said, that 6 minutes, it's more or less 6 minutes of sleep that you lose. It's not loss in a bad way. You actually gain it back in the fact that you're transitioning from sleepiness to wakefulness. And also you think clearer. Improved cognition means that you're thinking more clearly, that your memory is getting online and memory to build your learning, I should say, to build memories and thoughts and your ability to get insight and all those things that you need for the day are busy aligning beautifully, especially if you are a night owl, or you battle with this, whether you go to bed early, but you battle to wake up. This snooze thing is going to help you do that transition more effectively. So you move into the day with more wisdom and insight. So as I said, it does shorten that. Sunderland is the main researcher in the study. And she says that snoozing does shorten sleep, but it's not the same kind of shortening that happens when REM sleep is disturbed, which is restorative sleep. It's different and doesn't harm. So what that means is that we go through sleep cycles. Okay, we go through around about 4 to 5 sleep cycles during the course of a night. And I'm sure you know this, but I'm just going to explain it again. Three of those generally are, let me just make sure that I get this right. Three are non-REM, and then one is two are more or less two are REM sleep. REM, REM stands for rapid eye movement. So we're going to have two stages of non-REM sleep, two cycles. Then we're going to have two of REM sleep, which is the deep sleep. And then you're going to have another non-REM sleep. So that's kind of the cycle that the average person is going through. Okay. And then basically what happens is that when we wake up during the middle of like non-REM, not the first two stages, because that's light sleep. It's easy to wake someone up in that stage. But once you hit the third cycle of non-REM, the REM sleep, and then the one just before you wake up, just before that 30 minutes, that's where it's more difficult to wake you up. And that's the stage of where we dream, just before we're waking up. And that is when that's disturbed. That's not good for us. Okay. And we can get through that and everything can be healed. And I'm always I always get a little concerned about telling people to worry about their sleep. So don't worry about your sleep, because that's the worst way. That's going to make your sleep worse. If you're having sleep issues, I've done a great podcast, and I'll do a NeuroLive on how to deal with that. But essentially, the more you fear and worry about not sleeping, the worse your sleep will get. So it's important to just embrace the problems with sleeping. And as you relax into that, you start you'll have more insight into the reasons why you're battling to sleep. And then that will help to improve your sleep. But what this study is saying is that the sleep-wake that happens in the 20 to 30 minutes of the snooze time isn't damaging you. It's actually improving you. Okay. It's not making you it's either making you better, but certainly not worse than someone who doesn't do it. But if we have lots of disruptions while we are asleep, so during the course of the night when we're sleeping, when you're going through those cycles, when those get constantly disrupted, that's the problem. And that's why it's so important to deal with that in a calm way. Get yourself calm first, and, to get yourself embracing the lack of sleep and seeing it as information to be able to solve it. Okay. But I will do a NeuroLive on that. And I have done a podcast and written a blog on sleep. There's quite a bit in my, you'll find on my blog on my webpage, drleaf.com. But I will do another one here, as I said. So the little extra naps that you get in that little 30 minute window, 20 minute window, help thinking during the day, because snoozers feel less tired. So that's another reason when you've had those snoozers, you feel less tired. If you don't have the snoozers, if you need the snoozers and you don't have the snoozers, you're going to feel more tired. If you need the snoozers and you have the snoozers, you'll feel less tired. And if you're less tired, you're more alert, you're more focused, you can do more, et cetera, et cetera. So snoozing seems to prevent reverting to deep stages of sleep and increase cortisol, helping the brain to wake up. So if you battle to wake up and you don't do the snoozing, and you find yourself falling back into very deep stages of sleep and then having to jump up and, run because you've overslept kind of thing, that's more disruptive. Because when we wake up in the morning, one of the many, many biochemical things that happen in your mind-brain-body connection, stimulated by your mind, happen in your brain-body and are stimulated by your mind, is that cortisol starts to rise. And as it starts to rise, if you fall back into a deep sleep and don't get woken up, then it disrupts the rising. Now suddenly it's going down and it's confusing, and that can make you feel really groggy. So that's where, if you find that you wake up and you tend to fall back into deep sleep and then feel really groggy and a little bit not so alert and for a few hours, or maybe through the day if that happens, then that may be a great tool for you to introduce, is to start the snooze thing where you set your time 30 minutes before and wake up when you press it, wake up, little nap, et cetera, as you've been describing. It is important to note the Sunderland does say that for those who are already getting insufficient or disturbed sleep, a 30-minute snooze period may be more detrimental than for someone who is sleeping 7 to 8 hours, or whatever that is. There's so much debate as well about how many hours you should sleep, and is it every single day? And it's been very, very rigid, the sleep research, in terms of you must sleep 8 hours a day, 7 days a week, or else, and it can make you very anxious. And some days you will sleep less, some days more. So everyone's got their own average bio-individuality. There's so many factors. What's going on in your life? It changes over time, depending on what's going on, if you're on holiday or not on holiday, whether you have extra things going on in your life, etc. So I don't want you to get hung up on 7 to 8 hours. But basically what this research is saying is that if you're not on average getting a regular few hours, decent few hours of sleep, then that's when the snoozing can be disruptive. Okay. So then it's really important before you introduce the snoozing thing is to try and work out your bio-individual sleep pattern. And then maybe introduce snoozing to help you wake up as needed. We all need more mental and physical energy in our lives to not only do the things we need to do, but also to make more time for the things and people we love. This is why I love the High Performance Energy Shot Ketone IQ. It has no sugar or caffeine, is FDA and WADA compliant, and all you have to do is take one dose daily in the morning to support your energy levels and cognition, and 2 to 3 doses before workouts for better performance and recovery. After its first release in 2017, Ketone IQ fueled 60% of the teams on the Tour de France and landed a $6 million contract with the US Special Operations Command. It was that good. In fact, a network of universities are currently using this product to fuel research on neurodegenerative diseases, TBI, glucose management, and longevity. Now made more affordable and accessible, Ketone IQ, which taps into nature's super fuel, can help you stay more focused throughout the day, ready to take on any challenge. I love that it also comes with free US shipping and a 60-day money-back guarantee. I personally love taking Ketone IQ in the morning before I start work, especially when I'm traveling and dealing with time differences and super busy schedules. It's a great part of my daily mind management routine and can be part of yours too. No wonder pro athletes like Des Linden, Michael Andrews, and Ironman world champion Sam Ladlow use Ketone IQ for optimal performance. And for a limited time only, you can save 30% off your first subscription order of Ketone IQ at hvmn.com/Dr. Leaf. That's hvmn.com/Dr. Leaf. That's 30% off your first subscription order of Ketone IQ at hvmn.com/Dr. Leaf. The link and details will be in the show notes. So it's also possible that snooze-related sleep disruptions are accumulated over several days. That's important to note, that we accumulate different patterns over time. So if you're going through a particular disruptive time, that can, mind is one of the major things that disrupts our sleep. An unmanaged mind, I should say, unmanaged mind. So going to sleep with things unresolved. And you can't resolve everything. You can't find solutions to everything. There's some things that take weeks, days, hours, months, years to resolve, especially if it's, you know, dealing with a person or something. But the difference is that if you acknowledge that, if you don't go to sleep with that worry on you, that's what disrupts one's sleep. And it will play out in your dreams and things because your unconscious mind's trying to sort all that out. So basically what this is saying is that for those who are already getting insufficient or disturbed sleep, a 30-minute snooze period may be more detrimental. And for someone who's sleeping 7 to 8 hours, whatever, 6 to 8 hours, 5 to 8 hours, it is also possible that snooze-related sleep disruptions are accumulated over several days. So if you've got a lot of things going on and you're not sorting it out and acknowledging it, or maybe you've started on a new medication that could have disrupted you, or maybe a new, whatever stress unmanaged that you are suppressing, suppressed stuff is a guaranteed sleep disruptor. And it can accumulate over time. So if you go into a particularly difficult time, it can accumulate. Or if you've got into the pattern or habit of not dealing with your stuff, that can over time accumulate and then disturb your sleep. Okay. So it impacts people differently. So young adults typically press snooze more often than older ones. And then 42% of adolescents have difficulties waking up from sleep. That's another study in 2014, Amaral et al. So that's 42% of adolescents have difficulty waking up from sleep. So it's a higher percentage the younger you are, but not 100% of adolescents. So we've always got to look at the individual. So Thomas Kilkenny, who's the director of the Institute of Sleep Medicine at Staten Island University Hospital, says that adults in their early to mid-20s tend to stay up late and get less sleep overall. So it's all part of the mind-brain-body development and the network development and all of that as that's happening through or into adulthood. And then the constant changes, because your brain is always changing, your body is always changing, because your mind is always changing. Your mind changes your brain and your body, because your mind is the sentience that drives your brain and your body. So basically, the younger you are, and as you are growing, you're going to have, there's a lot of research establishing that the 20-year-old sort of university, college-going students tend to stay up later. And also in high school, they tend to just, that's what the body just seems to want to stay up later. And that's where the snooze button can really help. Being a chronic snoozer can really help. Then here, Kilkenny talks a little bit about the biological clock that we have, this built-in circadian rhythm, this biological clock, which is a 24-hour cycle, and it helps the body regulate and process, including wakefulness and sleep. So we've got our clock that's 24 hours, and it regulates sleep and wakefulness, and including waking up, okay? And for some people, that's the what they call a night owl, where you go to sleep later, as I mentioned in the beginning, and it's harder to wake up. And then others that are a morning lark, where it's easier to wake up in the morning. Okay. But adolescents seem to, the younger you are, as I said, it seems to be that there's more difficult to wake up in the morning. And in once you're sort of around 20, around that age, the body just seems to want to stay up later and sleep later in the morning. So maybe we should have lectures later in the morning for students. Partly the fault is that the body just doesn't want to go to sleep until 1 o'clock or something in the morning, even if you have to get up at 6 to go to school. So snoozing can really help us, Kilkenny says. So it's easier for a morning lark to wake up, as I've mentioned. So in summary, how to get the most out of snoozing if you're a snoozer, and if sometimes maybe you need a snoozer. So this is more for night owls, or if you have had a late night, or if you're traveling. So the snoozing is great. So some of you are naturally going to do it, okay? Like I'm just battle to wake up in the morning, so it definitely helps me. But if you're traveling, so your time clock is thrown off, and I travel a lot, and different across different time zones, so that's really the snoozing thing becomes really important. And I notice even with my husband, who can wake up early and jump up and whatever, when we're traveling, it's more difficult. And also daylight savings. We know we've heard so much about daylight savings. So snoozing is a way of adjusting. So maybe all of us need to try a little bit of the snoozing when over daylight saving. I've said this already, but I'm just summarizing. So if you fall back into deep sleep, it's going to take you longer to wake up. And that's where the snooze button can be super helpful. So if you're in the habit of waking up and then falling back into a deep sleep, that pattern can also benefit from the snoozing thing. To get that under control, we just need to remember it doesn't replace a good night's sleep. So it's not that the snoozing is going to replace the good night's sleep. We do need it, the good night's sleep. And as I've already mentioned, we're not going to stress about getting, worry about sleep. We're going to first embrace the lack of sleep to find out why, and then work through it. As I say, go listen to the podcast on that. More research is needed, but it does dispel that lazy stereotype of being just too tired to jump out of bed in the morning, or sort of the lazy stereotype of people just can't get up, or they keep falling back asleep, that they're lazy. Not lazy, just battle to wake up. Well, thanks for joining me. I hope this has helped you, and I hope that you try out the neurocycle when you wake up. So even if you are a morning lark and you wake up super early and you wake up whatever time and you can jump out of bed, don't forget to do that neurocycle, because even if you jump out of bed, you could jump out of bed with a bunch of worries, and whatever you jump out with goes with you for the day. So really add that neurocycle in the morning to help you transition into the day in a helpful way. See you next time. I hope you found today's podcast interesting and helpful. If you want more tips and help with managing anxiety, depression, and mental health, be sure to visit my website at drleaf.com and to sign up for my weekly newsletter, where I also include a schedule of my speaking events and so much more. And follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Just look for Dr. Caroline Leaf. Also, I love seeing all your posts on social media about this podcast. I love seeing what resonates with you and what you've learned. So be sure to continue posting and tagging me and letting me know what you think and how these tips worked out for you. And don't forget, leave a review and keep spreading the word about this podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I really hope you learned something new and helpful. Till then, I'm Dr. Caroline E. This podcast represents the opinions of myself and my guests. The content here should not be taken as medical advice. The content here is for educational and informational purposes only. Please consult your healthcare professional for any individual medical questions you may have. While we make every effort to ensure that the information we are sharing is accurate, we welcome any comments, suggestions, or corrections of errors.